Wednesday, March 3rd, and we're waiting for just a few more members to come in to reach a quorum, but we would like to get started. And we have four bills today, and we do have a little bit shorter meeting time, so we want to make sure we hear from everyone who's here to testify on these important legislation related to job growth in Minnesota. And Senator Dahl, you are first on the agenda with Senate File 2719, which is Bioscience Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program Extension to include clean energy businesses. So, Senator Dahl, I know that you aren't with our committee all the time, but we really appreciate your efforts to address job growth in Minnesota at these very trying times. I appreciate that all of our members are working so hard on this issue. So thank you for being here today and sharing this with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you very much. That is what we're trying to do with this particular legislation, 2719. Just to be clear, this bill is really, so the members know, it's a dual-track bill right now. There is some language in the bonding bill that's running with this as well, and not knowing where some of these pieces of legislation may end up, we want to make sure that we can get as many tools in the box as possible at the end of the session, and this is one of those tools that we can do. Now, it's a program that's already in place as a bioscience business development grant program, and we wanted to expand it to include the definition of clean energy as well, so that we there's a lot of potential. It's an emerging industry as well in our state for renewable energy. There is a tie-in between bioscience and clean energy development, and we'd like to be able to have the ability to extend grants where appropriate into the clean energy sector. And that is really, for the most part, all this bill does. Defines what clean energy is. It's anything that would further the development of Minnesota's green economy and would apply to the overall. It really is for public infrastructure, so that in municipalities that have a business that wants to take a technology and develop it a little further. We know that in these early stages, businesses have difficulty getting funding for a lot of their projects to get them going. This would help with municipalities to at least develop with the infrastructure around the development of a business in their community. I do have one testifier that could maybe give a little more detail for what we're doing, Mr. Kuhlman, if you wouldn't mind coming forward and could share a few ideas on how this program might work.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Terry Kuhlman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority, and we also contract with the Department of Trade and Economic Development to manage their community infrastructure programs, of which the bioscience is one of several that provide infrastructure financing. And as Senator Dahl mentioned, in the bonding bill, we've already kind of modified the program to expand it beyond bioscience to basically innovative technology. I'm not sure the route this would go is in the policy, overall policy bill or other department, but kind of want to keep that in mind later on, see which bill actually moves forward. We have no qualms expanding that bioscience into areas that provide the really good, high-paying, high-quality jobs, and it would be easy to plug this concept into that language as well.
Well, I think what you just said was important. It was high-paying and high-quality jobs. That's something that's very important to this committee. And I do want to reflect that in the minutes that we do have a quorum at this point in time. So thank you.
I should just mention for the record that this program really provides infrastructure, the roads and industrial park, the water, sewer, the real basic stuff. It's not like we're subsidizing business. We're just reducing the cost of municipalities providing that infrastructure.
Well, I do know that in the in Destination 2025, we talk about what are the components that you need to have a vibrant economic development plan within these industries, and we do talk a lot about the infrastructure. Do we have the roads? Do we have the connections to the other global marketplaces through our transportation, sector. So I think that's very important. So, Senator Dahl, thank you very much for bringing this forward. I think it really makes sure that we're taking advantage of all opportunities before us. So that's very important. Are there any questions from our members on this provision? Well, I think, Senator Dahl, that we're all in agreement with you that this is very important language. And, again, you know, we just want to make sure that we have the resources we need in all of our most promising economic sectors. So Senator Sparks will move that Senate File 2719, as introduced, be recommended to pass. And where is this bill going? Is it going to the floor?
It's not ready for the
Yeah, I think that's what
we believe it's going to the floor. So, on Senator Sparks' motion, any further discussion?
Okay, not do anything today. Okay.
With none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign, and the motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator Dahl. And next we have Senate File 2879, which is Senator Fredrickson, Public Facilities Authority's Duties and Program Modifications. And Senator Fredrickson, we appreciate you being here today with us, and
you,
we
ma'am.
Look like we have it's Mr. Coleman again with the Public Facilities Authority, correct?
Correct.
Madam Chair, right. I've
Very
asked
good.
Mr. Coleman to join us. Senate File 2873 makes some changes to Public Facility Authority. Just as a way to start, the Public Facility Authority is formed by six state commissioners, chaired by the Commissioner of Energy and Economic Development. The other commissioners are Management and Budget, Agriculture, PCA, Health, and Department of Transportation. The PFA makes loans for a few activities. The most visible and most best known are the Clean Water Revolving Fund and also the Drinking Water Fund. Senate File 2873 makes some changes to the administrative structure of PFA. It also make some changes so that we can utilize some federal funds that we expect come to Minnesota. And also, it just updates a few sections, perhaps makes some of the language more descriptive of their activities. So, Madam Chair, if it's okay with you, I think I'll ask Mr. Coleman to walk through the bill with you. I think that'd probably be the best use of our time.
That would be great. Mr. Coleman?
Yeah, Madam Chair and committee members, you should also have a handout that just kind of summarizes the sections, and I'll kind of use that too. But Section 1 kind of clarifies the role of the executive director, not only being we crossed out responsible for staff of the authority and kind of spelled that out so it's more explicit in line with other statutes. And that is also related to the very last section in the back of the bill, which transfers the existing employees that are paid and assigned to the authority that currently work with are technically employees of deed over to the authority. And this is something we thought we did a couple years ago, and it wasn't quite worded right in the bill, so we're doing another stab at it this year. The key issue here is the authority is a statutory appropriated entity, that is, the funds of the authority are appropriated annually, automatically by statute. And our obligations are generally in the neighborhood of 20-year obligations that we sell. We've got contracts with bondholders, as well as all the construction projects we have to be there and to make those payments, collect the funds and make the bond payments. We also have a contract with US EPA that allows us to operate these funds, and the reason the authority was created back in 1987 was because federal law requires the agency or the state to commit to operate these programs in perpetuity, not on a biannual basis. So the authority was established as a statutorily appropriated entity to be able to receive those federal grants. It was never a problem until budget issues popped up and whether or not the state agencies would be around July 1st to manage these programs or not. And when those issues arose, at least twice in the past decade, the need for this legislation became a little clearer. So that's the reason for Section 1. Section 2, modifying the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund, and this is to comply with this federal appropriation language. Federal law that appropriates money to the PFA is requiring that not less than 30% after the first $1 billion of appropriations at the federal level be used either as grants, principal forgiveness, or negative interest. We found that principal forgiveness is the best way to go It looks like a grant, smells like a grant, but if you call it principal forgiveness, you don't have the federal grant requirements. So we can follow state law when it comes to all the things like procurement and bidding and things like that. And the amount of documentation is substantially less. Currently, our statutes don't allow us to make grants with the revolving loan funds because it's always been prohibited under federal law. So we're changing it to allow us to do principal forgiveness. We're using the same formula as we're later in the bill when we're looking at the wastewater infrastructure fund, so we can use the state funds that are used for the WIF program and the federal dollars interchangeably. So it should be the same criteria. The principal there's also a green component, which is called green infrastructure, which is kind of a misnomer. It's anything to do with energy conservation, energy generation, water recycling, things like that that are more innovative, whether related to clean water, stormwater retention and treatment. A variety of things are defined as kind of the green infrastructure. We're proposing, because it worked very well with the ERA funds that we received last year, to provide 25% principal forgiveness for those type of projects to encourage cities to move that in that direction, more of the energy efficient recycling, the materials and things that can generate energy. And we're want to put a cap on it, not more than $1 million of that principal forgiveness related to green to allow to spread that money around. And the federal government requires that 20% of the funds appropriated annually be used for those type of activities. So, on the next section be the modification to the wastewater infrastructure funding program. This we've talked about doing for a couple years, ever since PCA changed their scoring criteria in the certification process. We moved away from median household income, I believe it was 8 years ago, and went to market value and went from a grant to a 40-year loan, with 0% interest, and payments deferred for 20 years. The ERA program generated a lot of interest. We found it a lot easier to administer. Plus, EPA has now let us go from 20-year loans to 30-year loans. So the idea of spreading, using WIF to spread the principal payments out further is no longer needed. So we're proposing to go back to median household income as an affordability criteria versus property values, and make it a grant instead of a loan, because we can do the loans out 30 years with the state revolving loan fund. It allows a little less WIF going into projects. In essence, allows us to do more with the money we've got, and it provides a little extra subsidy than the loan does to cities. So it's kind of a win-win for everybody on that proposal.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Skloy.
Madam Chair, could you repeat that? I didn't quite catch what you were doing with regard to the cities. You're switching from property wealth to, would you repeat that, please?
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Skloy. I believe it was 8 years ago we changed the program because we're getting a lot of high-cost lakeshore projects where the properties benefiting tended to be very high cost. In one city, almost all of them were in the seven-digit figures, property values. And yet the city, because it's a more tourism-based community and the wages tend to be fairly low, is a very low-income community, so they qualified for a lot of WIF. And we thought if we did that, city program would die. I mean, we can never get the legislature to appropriate it. So we changed it to 5% of market value as an affordable measure for debt service to get away from that. And now we're looking at meeting household income. So really, it benefits the rural communities a lot, and even some of the larger communities that have a lot of infrastructure costs, like City of Duluth, for example, which has one of the highest sewer rates in the country. Because of the industrial mix there, the property values are up. They don't qualify, but if we switch to median household income, that's just one example. They'd qualify for wastewater infrastructure funding program. And as a general rule, looking at our needs list, which cities qualify for a little less with money because it is a grant now instead of a 40-year loan, and it just, it's easier to hit that affordability. So state, same amount of money, we can do more projects, and the cities benefit a little bit too.
Thank you. I just didn't pick it all up.
Thank you, Senator Skoit. So I'd like to continue.
Yes. The next section is the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program, making several changes to that. And that is a program that provides technical assistance grants to the very small communities, generally under 30 households, that have severe problems. Most of the ones we're working with are straight pipe communities. That is, their wastewater is basically hooked up to a tile line that goes directly into a ditch or a creek somewhere. This program provides kind of a two-phase, the way it's structured today, two-phase funding approach. First is a technical assistance grant to help these cities figure out what needs to get done, whether or not they can replace septics or have to go with community mounds. Most of that technical assistance money historically has gone to designers to look at the soil conditions and whether or not septics are appropriate, plus the University of Minnesota Ag Extension Group that deals with septic issues as far as helping the cities look at how they're going to operate and maintain these systems and what's appropriate for the size of communities. And then the second phase is a 50% grant, 50% loan to actually do the construction work. And what we're proposing with this legislation is expand the technical assistance providers, not just to U of M, but also nonprofit entities, regional development commissions, things like that. Minnesota Rural Water would be a prime example. They've got some really good staff that are knowledgeable in area septics, and they can have a lot of experience working with the very small communities and kind of speak their language and can help them develop a system to operate and maintain those things. So we're trying to broaden that, primarily because two of the staff at U of M that used to work on this program are no longer at the university, and my understanding, they don't intend to replace those individuals. So it's one of those things that needs to get done because there's a lot of these unincorporated communities that have septic problems that need to get addressed. And the next change is rather than just making loan and grant awards for the construction or replacement, what we're finding is a lot of these towns, once they know it needs to get done, they don't have the resources to actually pay for the design work. If they got to build a community mound system or something like that, engineering firms have a tendency not to want to gamble and invest the time and money in these communities, not certain that they're actually going to go ahead. So we're proposing to make that loan grant program eligible for the design work up front, so they can look at the design and get the bid specs ready and actually bid the project. And then once it's bid, finance it. So that's a change. Again, I want to emphasize these are for cities generally with 30 connections or less. So we're talking very small. I think the average community we're working with is about 17 households. So it's pretty small. So there's not a lot of financial capability there, and the need for technical assistance quite a bit.
So another question from Senator Skoit.
To that point about these smaller communities, I've actually worked with a number of them as we try to solve some of their problems. And one of the holdup is always this local share, which drives their monthly fees up into the $60 a month range. Do you think that this would be reducing that local impact then? Is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoit, all depends on the solution, because it is a 50% grant and 50% loan. If it's the basic replacement of a septic system, which can run $5,000 to $7,000, and depending on if they got to go a mound, it might go up to $12,000 to $13,000. That's probably affordable. If it's a community mound system or they got to do a collection system, it's going to get up there in the expensive range. Then if it gets too expensive, then we start looking at other programs too. Can the TMDL grant program, is it the city required to do this because of an impaired water study? Try to find other grant sources, work with USDA Rural Development. But when it hits the $50 range, we get concerned, especially in these small communities.
There.
Madam Chair, and I apologize.
apologize.
No, this is good discussion, I think. And Mr. Coleman, if you could reference, as you go through the bill, if you could reference which section you're describing, that would be helpful, too. But Senator Skoyte, follow-up, please.
And $50 is significant in a lot of these smaller communities.
Absolutely.
So please continue, Mr. Coleman.
Yes. The next section, I believe, is Section 12, Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. No, I'll take that back. Before that, Section 10 starts modifications to the Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund. And there again, these changes are primarily to deal with principal forgiveness, which is required in the appropriation bill that appropriates the federal dollars to the state to provide principal forgiveness, and also that green, not less than 30% of the federal funds need to be used for principal forgiveness. So this year, that amounts to about $6.8 million of the total will be available for principal forgiveness, which is about seven times more than we've had in the past. And Drinking Water's always had a small component of grant at the federal level for the high cost stuff. This increases that amount of funding pretty substantially. We're also concerned whether or not we have, because water systems are a lot cheaper to build than wastewater, we want to drop that criteria from 1.4, which we had existed, down to 1.2% of median household income, so we can get rid of the money. Otherwise, we'll lose it. So that's the change there. The green technology is the same. Required, we want to do 25% of the principal forgiveness when it comes to the qualified green activities. The one change to the program that's fairly significant here.
So where is the the kind of reference to the green business? The where is that in the bill? The language for that.
Line 9.
Madam Chair, it's page 9, line 14 and 15.
Okay, so we're into Section 12 now.
Yes.
Okay.
And I apologize.
That would just, you know, and I really appreciate that, and we just want to be able to follow where that is. So in Section 12, okay, and what line was that again, Senator Fredrickson?
Madam Chair, it's lines 14 and 15 on page 9.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, number 9.
So is there a definition for green infrastructure?
The US EPA has a small booklet that defines, and we can provide that if you want, but it's related to anything related to water conservation, energy conservation, cogeneration, and a few other items. But the whole idea is more energy efficiency, more retention of water, things like that, use less water.
And I just ask that because we've had a number of discussions in the legislature about, we use the word green to describe green manufacturing, green chemistry, green energy, and
green jobs,
you know, green. What exactly are we referring to? So I just wondered if in this section, if there is, and I'm not suggesting that we have a definition, but if it is referenced somewhere, because it has been something that's come up with some of our other economic development bills as people wanting to include the word green in front of everything, and it causes for some, you know, for some people they think that's good. Other people, it creates some controversy. So,
yeah, Madam Chair, I think we could provide that information. I think we have it on our website, but we could provide it, the EPA's expanded definition of all the eligible activities, because it's quite extensive, and they use numerous groups to come up with this list.
Fairly recent, too, isn't it?
Pardon?
They didn't have that definition last year.
No, and they
Madam
they
Chair?
Did,
yeah. Yes.
I smiled and asked that question because when they had the ARRA bill up last year, the federal law addressed green infrastructure. There was a set-aside for green infrastructure. But at that point, they had no definition of it. They just – apparently, we would know it when we saw it.
Very good. Well, thank you, Senator Fredrickson. I just wanted to raise it because, you know, as I said, we do. And Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, when they dug up the street in front of my house, they put in green pipes, so I don't know if that.
That qualifies, yeah.
You know, maybe it's the color, Senator Tomasoni. A good point of
but
so.
But I have a real question here. While I don't know what green infrastructure is, I also don't know what other environmentally innovative activities are.
So, Mr. Coleman, do you have, and
yeah,
we
Madam
are just,
Chair, Senator
just
Tomasoni,
challenging you here with a couple things.
I could ask PCA to do it, but converting sludge into energy. I mean, sludge burns at like 1,600 degrees temperature. You can do a lot of things with that kind of heat as far as generating a lot of stuff. Bill Dunn just handed me attachment 7 to something that gets into that, and I'll gladly give it to you, but it does cover a lot of things.
Give me an example.
But it's really...
Just give me an example.
The term green... Well, Met Council, for example, is putting in a lot of solar panels on one of their sites to generate electricity to operate the plant. Wastewater treatment plants, by the way, are the largest in the metropolitan area, largest energy user in the 7-county metropolitan area, or the Metropolitan Council's wastewater treatment plant.
Oh, Madam Chair.
So just reducing that energy cost is considered green or innovative technology.
So follow up from Senator Tomasoni.
Madam Chair, Mr. Coleman, are we... Are we treading on ground where we might be using PFA funds for things other than water and wastewater cleanup?
So, Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, we still have,
Mr.
it has
Coleman.
To be included as part of the, like, drinking water treatment plant or drinking water delivery systems. One of the things that EPA allows is if the flow, because as pipes get old and corroded with hard water, especially in western Minnesota, they close down, and it costs just a lot more to push that water through the pipe. And by replacing those pipes, increasing the flow and reducing the energy use of the system, it can literally reduce the energy used on a drinking water system
that
by 20%,
sense.
Just having good pipes that deliver the water. We find out those type of things are eligible, but it's still... has to be, you know, the wastewater or drinking water or stormwater treatment component. It's just a matter of are there other byproducts that reduce cost or, like I say, use in a wastewater stream, there's a lot of things that can be used to create energy and recycle.
Madam Chair, Mr. Coleman, I just want to make sure that, we have huge infrastructure needs in the area of wastewater and clean water, and I just want to make sure that we're not using the money that's appropriated here for generating electricity as opposed to cleaning up the water. And so you have some guidelines, I'm assuming, that make sure that the water area is taken care of first.
I think one of our air projects I'm trying to think is Winona, where they're actually using the sludge, burning the sludge to generate the steam to move a turbine that actually powers the wastewater treatment plant. So rather than buying electricity, they're generating their own electricity to operate their plant, but they're still operating the plant, and they're doing two things. They're getting rid of that sludge, which is expensive to landfill, and converting it to energy.
So it's just a smarter way of doing business. We just want to make sure that we're, you know, using dollars appropriately. So Senator Tomasoni, good points.
I'm not sure that I want to care about the sludge plant when I'm trying to clean up the water.
That's the goal. Get
Here
rid of those pollutants somehow or another and do it in an environmentally friendly way, I guess, or more efficient way.
So, Mr. Coleman, please continue. Where are you at in the bill right now? I know we were in Section 12.
On page 9, if you look on lines 19 or 9.17, we're looking at principal forgiveness or grants, in essence, of 50% up to a maximum of $10,000 for the non-community public water systems.
Yeah.
We did this in the ERA funding where we had grants for the first time in Minnesota, I shouldn't say Minnesota, nationally, a good chunk of the water providers or public water systems are privately owned. And public water systems, anybody that serves 25 people or more, so you got apartment buildings, resort owners, bars, out in the countryside that have their own private wells. Those are permitted systems. In Minnesota, we've got 90 of those systems which are in violation of the Safe Drinking Water Act and need to do something with their water. With the ERA funding, we got 7 or 9 of those to do it, even though we had a lot of hardship. If you can imagine a small business owner that a resort owner having to deal with federal wage rates and Buy American and all the typical federal requirements. It was quite a shock. It took us a while to get things going. But with this, now that this looks like it's going to be a permanent fixture in the program, we want to keep addressing those 90 facilities.
Excellent.
So that's probably the only unique, significant change in the program is for the first, well, I shouldn't say the first time because we did it last year with the ERA funds, but making that a permanent fixture of the program. Madam Chair, on page 10.
Section 13.
In section 13, we get into the credit enhancement program. And this program had a statutory limit of $500,000 that we could certify $500 million of municipal and county debt. And if there was a default, if there's any money in the state general fund, we would pay the bondholders to assure the bondholders get paid and then work with the local unit of government, either state aid intercept or restructure the debt so they can pay the state back at the going rate that the state earns on their money in industrial treasurer's cash. There's never been a GO bond default in the state of Minnesota, and I hope there never is, because there is no general fund money to pay the bondholders. But we use that appropriation up quite fast once we included municipalities, water, sewer projects that PFA normally funds for cities that issue their own debt. A lot of that money was used to refinance debt because there's no prohibition for refinancing debt that was used for those kind of activities. We're trying to get away from refinancing. This is a contingent liability that the state has on their books, this backing bonds and local units government. So from now on, we're going to limit it to new construction-type activities, but we want to expand it from $500 million since we've already reached that cap to $1 billion. We worked with MMB. We know this is one of the areas that Moody's has addressed with them, the contingent liability issues with Minnesota Housing Finance Moral Obligation Bonds, Department of Education has a similar program for schools, and there's over $13 billion worth of school debt outstanding that has this backing. So we're trying to narrow it a little bit but still keep that tool open because it does provide Moody's rates. City and county debt that goes to this program is double A. S&P and Fitch rate the debt as triple. So it does have a significant advantage. Right now, a non-rated municipal bond versus a double A, triple A rated municipal debt is probably a 0.5% difference in the marketplace. So it reduces the borrowing costs cities go through pretty substantially at very, very, very little cost to the state as long as there's no default. So, and we only certify general obligation debt on the part of counties and cities. And it has to be on the county side. The project has to be related to things that the state basically has the counties do for them, social service, criminal justice-related facilities. On the city side, it has to be water, sewer-related activities, so things they do on their own without state assistance. So that's the bill, Madam Chair.
That's very good. Are there any questions for Mr. Coleman or Senator Fredrickson? Is there anyone else here to testify today on the bill?
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill. I think it's got to come to my committee.
So Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File Number 2873 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee of
Finance.
Right. To our Finance Committee. Any other discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails.
Madam
Chair,
members, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Fredrickson. I do want to note that that the bill with Senator Latz will not be heard today, but I have a bill, and Senator Mattson, I wondered if you would take your place at the table. So,
S-
Senate File 2751, Senator Saltzman. Welcome and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here today with Senate File 2751, and I'd like to start out by moving the A1 Authors Amendment. And this is just.
I'm told the A1 is technical amendment,
so Saltzman will move the.
Senator Saltzman to move the A1 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Saltzman on the bill.
On this bill, Mr. Chair, we've had some discussions. I think that when Dee came and presented to us earlier in the year, we did have some discussion about what are we doing to work with businesses that are considering relocating to other states, working with our businesses that are looking to expand in other states. And while we want to hang on to those businesses that we have, what are we doing to really seek out those businesses who may like to come to Minnesota? A couple examples came to mind. A couple years ago, I went with the Minneapolis and St. Paul Chambers on a trip to Atlanta. And I went on my own. I paid my own way. And it was really interesting because we met with the civic leaders from Atlanta. And what I found really interesting was that they spoke to us about how they sit down every year and put together a list of those businesses they're going to go out and get and bring back to Georgia and bring back to Atlanta. And so I thought that was really a good plan, and that they work with a public-private partnership. So I started thinking, you know, what are we doing here in Minnesota? Because we're trying to hang on to businesses that we have. We've talked a lot about emerging technologies. And so what are we doing in a proactive way? And certainly we are doing some good things, but could we do a better job? So I want to admit that this bill, as it's written, it really comes off of some legislation I saw was introduced in Wisconsin. And there are two pieces to it. The first piece is that what are we doing to create a fast action economic response team so that if we become aware that we are at risk for relocating or having a business that, you know, is looking to, like, you know, either relocate or expand outside the state, or what are we doing when we hear about prospects for expansion or else relocation within the state? What are we doing to contact them immediately and at least start to let them know that we care about them and what are their needs? We talked a lot about some of the economic tools that we need, and some of them have to do with the angel investor credit, and that is one piece. We also talk a lot about the corporate tax rate, and we need to have some discussions about that and other kinds of tax policy. But we also hear from businesses that they want to know that we care about them and we want them to stay here. And so that's sort of the idea of this response team, of that we have a team that it could be not only state staff and agency staff, but it could also be people from the private sector. The second part of this bill, then, is that I'm asking, you know, Dee to report to the legislature that really looks at identifying retention methods that the department currently uses and that retention methods that it could use to identify businesses at risk, and then also a proactive plan to identify businesses outside of the state that are seeking to either relocate or expand and could be encouraged to relocate here in Minnesota. And I would really encourage that this plan be developed with not only, again, it's, you know, our agency staff, but what are we doing to really collaborate with our economic development stakeholders from state government, business, and non-governmental organizations? And that's what I think that we see happening in other states. When Senator Metzen last year was very proactive in you know, trying to pull together some small group discussions, I know Senator Rosen and Senator Bonoff were at these meetings, and we each pulled together, you know, sort of small focus groups, bringing together, we had, you know, General Mills in the same room with a couple people from my district that run, you know, some manufacturing plants of less than 50 people talking about the business environment. And we heard from IBM, and they shared with us what, you know, Dubuque, Iowa did when they went to relocate there. And they shared examples of how their higher education institutions, their chamber, their community, their economic development people all came together and rolled out the red carpet and really went after IBM. So I'm not suggesting that we don't have great people with Indeed who are doing a great job. It's just that what could we do to really do a much more aggressive job? And I know Senator Rosen and I spoke to the small manufacturers, precision manufacturers, a couple weeks ago. And they were sharing stories about what they're doing in Iowa. And again, this report would give us an idea of sort of a, perhaps a wish list of, you know, we do have some tools in our tool belt right now, but what do we not have that other states do? And I know economists will also talk about, you know, why are we competing with each other? But the issue is that that's a fact of what's happening. And today with me is Joe Ward, who is a constituent of mine. He has a new company, and he really, really wanted to stay in Minnesota. He really did. And I'll let him speak about that. But when it came time to looking at what he needed to grow, he really got a great deal from across the river, and he's now in Hudson. And the one thing that was really difficult to see online was when Wisconsin's governor welcomed him to Hudson. And listening to him about, well, what did we do to really make sure we did everything we could to keep him in Minnesota? So, and again, this is not a reflection on any of our departments or any individuals or state leaders. What could all of us be doing? What are legislators doing when a company comes to town and wants to really feel like we really want them? We want them to feel a lot of love here in Minnesota. So, Mr. Ward, if you wouldn't mind perhaps introducing yourself and sharing your story.
Hi. Welcome, Mr. Ward.
Thank you. I feel a little humbled coming before a group like this. Don't do this every day. But I'm happy to share our story, and I've shared it with Kathy several times and with others. RJA Dispersions is the name of our company, and we were founded in 2002 in Maplewood, Minnesota. We, my business partner and I, Dr. Ron Atkins, both came from 3M Company, where we learned this basic business and have expanded on a niche. We provide colors. We manufacture colors, which are nanoparticle pigments that are suspended in the right fluids to be used in inkjet inks for large format printers that make commercial signage for everything from trade show booths to architectural to advertising and shopping malls to trucks to buses, this kind of thing for commercial signage and architectural design. We've been growing rapidly. We, particularly in the last 5 years, we've grown from essentially a few thousand dollars in sales till this year will be between $1 million and $1.5 million. And it's been rapid growth in spite of the recession. We grew 40% last year when the rest of the economy was down because we're in a niche market where it's growing, this whole area of digital printing.
We just do it.
I was writing down a little bit of chronology. I told you we were founded in 2002, and in November of 2007, we decided, based on our business growth, that we needed a larger facility. We could project where we were going to outrun our capacity in our building in Maplewood. We talked to our landlord. We talked about expansion to a unit next door. We hired an architect to determine the feasibility of building a new building. We had initial discussions with the folks, the state of Minnesota and the Department of Economic Development, and initial discussions with similar organizations in the state of Wisconsin. Over the next few months, we developed several kinds of possibilities for what we might do. In Minnesota, we had discussions that acquainted us with the Job Z program.
and with economic development that was primarily focused and intended to focus business development outside of the Twin Cities area. And we were given there's a business development director in North Branch who was very responsive, as well as the individual that we talked to at Deed was quite responsive in terms of talking to us. But what we learned was, A, the Job Z program had about run out of money, and so there really wasn't a lot of hope for tax credits and property tax and income tax that were provided there. And two, the tax increment financing was harder to come by. North Branch was willing to consider it, but said it would be a long shot based on their situation. And further, it was quite a ways from our homes in Woodbury. And so we also had discussions with folks in Wisconsin. And they have a business development director there in Hudson who's very active, very proactive. He's Mr. Hospitality. I've complimented him on many occasions for his role in our move, because I think that, just as Kathy was saying, just how do you make people feel welcome? They made us feel very wanted and very welcomed. He quickly took us to New Richmond, to Somerset, to Hudson, and River Falls. All four of those communities came forward to us and said, yes, we would love to have you relocate here. Here's the kinds of things we can offer. Hudson was the most developed and had the fewest programs, but all three of the others basically would do tax increment financing, would give us land if we built a building there, and let us use the land essentially as a down payment for a SBA 504 type loan. And we were considering all of that. In fact, went fairly far along with River Falls and got a formal offer from the development group in River Falls to do that. But the economy was getting tighter, and so we decided to put the project on hold just because of the uncertainty, and we could see a lot of vacant buildings and weren't sure that was the right thing to do. That was the summer of 2008, we decided to put it on hold. But early last summer, it became very clear that we were outrunning. We were just overrunning our facility. We had to move even in a recession because of the growth. So we, again, explored things. We decided that we would lease this time rather than build a building, because there was quite a surplus of buildings on the market, and it didn't make sense. And we got a fantastic deal on a lease right there in Hudson, which was the closest of all to us. We're less than 10 miles from work, and it's opposing traffic. And so we go back and forth from Woodbury, and we commute to Hudson. I think one of the programs that Minnesota lacks that they had in Wisconsin is a regional business fund. At one time, each of the cities had the ability to loan money to prospective businesses to encourage them, and they've pooled that pool of money, and it's a recycling sort of thing. You have to pay it back, but it's a 4% interest kind of thing, and they typically do 5 to 7 year terms. And what that's allowed us to do is to make up the difference between what Wells Fargo would do for us. Originally, Wells Fargo would make 100% loans on new equipment, and we had a major capital expansion that was needed, and they would do only 60% now because of the economy. Well, this regional development fund made up the difference. We've got a package together, and this equipment's going to be delivered this month.
Mr. Ward, how was it that the RDF capitalized, do you know? How'd the money
Falls,
get in there to...
I have actually a copy of information, which I'll leave with you if you'd like. It's the River Falls Development Corporation was the one that made the land offer. And, in fact, they were willing to build and lease to us and give us a credit for the land in that contract as well. But we've ended up in Hudson at a place called River Bluffs Business Center, which is a building that was built in the boom.
Up in the River Bluffs, yeah.
River Bluffs, yes.
So you can see Minnesota probably from your office.
Actually, you can, yes.
So, see Woodbury? Not that far.
Not that far, but close. But anyway, the bottom line is it just made sense for us, economic sense for us, to take advantage of this move. The lease rates were lower. The loan fund was available. And it was less than 2 weeks after we were over there. Bill Rubin, the director over there, gave me a call, and he says, well, the governor's going to be here. He would like to welcome you to the state of Wisconsin. Would you like to have him come over? And we said, well, how can we refuse an offer like that? And we did. They've also done a lot of nice publicity for us. I mean, an article in the Hudson paper. There have been three or four articles like this, just reaching out and welcoming us. I guess we're a small fish in a smaller pond there, and in Minnesota there's a lot of larger corporations. But they're focused on hospitality, and I think maybe what Minnesota had was good programs in Job Z for moving jobs from the Twin Cities or attracting jobs out state, which is great. I mean, that's Minnesota. It's good for the state. But for companies like ours, that wasn't viable. It just really wasn't viable for us to drive to North Branch on a commute when the competition was to drive to Hudson, and we even got a better deal. So I think I'd like to see, and we still live in Woodbury. We're very active involved citizens in Woodbury, and probably always will be. But I think we should be looking at how do we keep and attract jobs in the Twin Cities as well. It's not, I mean, outstate's great, and if that fits someone, but we're losing jobs in the Twin Cities. And there's three different companies that were also welcomed, all from the Twin Cities area, on the same day that we were.
And, up on the River Bluffs.
Up in Hudson, right, in the industrial park up there, by the water tower, just exit 2 and right up to the top of the hill.
By the racetrack?
Not too far from the racetrack, just up the hill from Menards and Home
Depot. That's still gathering dust and moss and
tumbleweed. We don't see much from that, but there's certainly filling up the
development park. They had a dog track
over
there for quite a while, didn't they? Want to make it into a casino, but... Senator Scheid, did you have a...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Mr. Ward, how many people do you employ, and what was the growth in jobs, and where do your employees live?
Those are good questions. We have 5 people now. We did have 4. We now have 2 of those are part-time, 2 are full-time. We have a 5th employee that we've been interviewing. I think we're going to make him an offer. He lives in Elk River presently, but he has just the right skill set that we're looking for. And he says, well, my wife's already looking in Hudson, and we're probably going to move over there to be close to the job if he gets that job. We're projecting, and part of the deal with the regional loan fund was that we projected a reasonable number of jobs for job growth over the next 3 to 5 years, and we'll likely be at 10 employees within 2 years. And we're pretty well automated. We have to compete with China and India in this business, and so we have to be low overhead. Our business model has assumed we're doing that. We're competing worldwide to begin with, and we're quite successful with that so far.
We're going to figure out, you're going to show us how that revolving fund, that's low interest thing, is capitalized and how it works. And
well, it was capitalized, as I indicated, by a combination of...
And somebody had to pay for the land to give it to you, and somebody had to...
Well, no, actually, where we are now is... I talked about 2 different programs. And each of the communities, River Falls and Somerset and New Richmond, has a tax increment financing program where they have a local development district that has been publicly purchased, and they will, if you move there, they'll give you the land if you build a building on it. The regional business fund is a separate item, and the communities pooled their resources for loan funds, and these are there's a committee, a regional committee that meets and considers applications. but they're reasonably well-funded. I don't know what their total is, but it's a revolving loan fund program, and I have a brochure on it. I'll leave this again.
I would be curious to see how it functions or
the
works.
The way it works is you apply. You have to certify that you're going to be adding jobs, and they have a certain formula for, I don't know, it's something like, I don't remember whether it was $30,000 or $50,000 of loan per employee that you're likely to add over the next 2 to 3 years is the ratio that they'll loan you. But it's structured for a small business. It's structured for a company like ours. You know, taxes don't
mean that
much to us.
Does there a pool that, does it capture, like a TIF district, does it capture the taxes over
now,
that
the
you
TIF,
pay?
There's two.
Understand TIF. Is it like that? Or?
There are two items. The TIF is one, which the River Falls people talk to us about. The revolving loan fund is another. The TIF, you do pay back, and they capture the value of that land in the taxes. In the revolving loan fund, the only payback is you pay back the loan, and it's low interest. And it's a 4% loan. And it's they'll take a second position on collateral like equipment and buildings.
Now, this is the kind of stuff this committee, you know, has to look at to compete
right.
with our neighbors.
The
and if there's any things that we could be doing, like Senator Salzman said, Senator Rosen and I and others have had some mini meetings with corporations here and there and trying to pick their brains too, you know. One was Hormel, that's Senator Sparks, that moved a number of folks down to Iowa, which we didn't. Maybe we didn't get in there soon enough. I don't know all the details, but we did talk to them at one of our meetings, mm-hmm. Senator Rosen, and I don't know if we did enough as a state to, you know, or if we just couldn't have gotten them anyway. I don't know that, but I don't think we intervened, as far as I could tell, that meeting we had maybe soon enough, and maybe that's one of the things you're trying to get at.
Well, I think, on that point, Mr. Chair, it's that this is not saying we're going to do those things.
Yeah.
Let's at least have a list of what some of those tools are, because sometimes it's difficult when you don't know what you don't know. I mean, what are the other economic development tools out there that are being used to recruit businesses? And again, we can't, you know, it is a bidding war to some extent, but are there some things that we could do building on our strengths here? And if we aren't aware of this, at least, you know, give us an idea, because we sometimes have to wait for the administration to put something forward for us, and here's a proposal, but what are some of the things that could be done? And then at least we can have that discussion of what is the best use of the resources that we have, and where are we losing out to other states because they have these opportunities.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's a very good point, Senator Saltzman, is that to look at the bill and the line 1.4, the department shall operate a fast action economic response team to contact and work with. So we're giving the department some
direction.
Direction. And are we going to have some feedback from them as far as what they've developed? So that's kind of, and I have another question too.
Right. Well, that point, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rosen, you know, this is a starting point for the discussion.
Yeah.
First of all, I think there is this, you know, direction, and I'm working off the A1 amendment now, is that there is direction that they shall operate a fast action response team. At the same time, there's this report due in 30 days after the bill is enacted to, you know, identify what is being done and then what are some of the other tools. And in order to develop this, is that there is to work with not just, again, within the department, but working with our other private, you know, economic development or businesses, other, mm-hmm. you know, governmental units, be they, you know, the economic development groups that are out there. So, again, it's sort of like with the authority we're looking in terms of how we bring together academic sector, public and private, it's that who really should be working together on economic development. It's not just the state. We need to work with the key players in that. So it's sort of nudging people together so that we're really aware of what are the needs on the front line. I'm not sure that it's our role to say what they are unless we've got some good advice from the people who can tell us what they need.
Mm-hmm. and Mr. Chair,
Rosen.
To even expand that, and I think I've talked about that this with various people, but I don't know if I've mentioned it in committee, that in Iowa, they have basically somebody, if you're thinking of relocating there or expanding there, they basically hold your hand and go through the permitting process, tell you what you have to file for, what date. They mitigate and make it much easier for you to do your business and get started, so there's no penalties, there's no roadblocks, and it's a smooth sailing all the way. And so there's a point guard, basically, somebody that is checking up with them. They're assigned somebody to get this business off and running, and it's been very successful there. I'm constantly saying Iowa's spanking us, and Wisconsin's spanking us too. And so this is a wonderful first stop or approach to that whole mentality, is how can we make it easier. When Senator Saltzman and I were on that panel to talk with the precision manufacturers, we asked them what was their number one complaint about Minnesota, and you can't say taxes. Remember that, Senator Saltzman? And that was very interesting. And it was basically the ease of doing business is very tough in Minnesota. But with that, and you mentioned several times about the tools and the toolbox, I would like to hopefully get a hearing on the TECSI, the governor's TECSI, the JOBSI expansion program, that would address what you're saying about that it didn't really apply to you in the metro area. And there's various discussions whether JOBSI has been successful, and every senator has their opinion. And for myself and for many in this room, it's been very successful because it is another tool in the toolbox. So we can, yeah, Senator Sparks is going, yes.
If it's in your district, though.
Yeah, that's right. Well, but the thing is, we're fighting. So let's have an inventory of what the tools are. Let's try to build on the tools that we already have in place. And I think the governor's initiative is very vital to that.
We got to hear it. We got to hear what's going on there. Senator Shy, did you have something? Well, this is certainly a step in the right direction. At least we find out somebody's thinking about running out of town, we'll get somebody to visit with them, and
we'll show up in 24 hours with
their
the
hands.
The economic response team. No.
Did you want to,
Mr. Chairman? If you do have a minute,
yeah. Are you holding her hands, or what are you doing? Sit
yes,
up.
Yes.
And this is not meant to, this is meant to augment or compliment.
Right. I want to be very clear on that, Mr. Chair. This is to give deed, to let them know that we support any efforts that they can do. And I know we have excellent staff, but for us to be able to know, what do you need? Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Loftus. I am with deed. Now, this bill and the concept is talking about the lifeblood of what we do. And it's things that our business development group feel passionately about. And so I appreciate the senator bringing this forward. And we will be happy to document the process that we use, the collaboration that we have with other people. We do a lot of work with the Minnesota Chamber, with local government organizations. As Senator Rosen said, that the governor's bill, we worked hard to create the idea of the TECSI to give us a tool in the metro area, too. So in any metro community where we're in competition, and again, these tools are not to hand out incentives to any company that wants them, but to those where we need to have it to keep it in Minnesota, whether it's to attract it or keep a company that might leave. And that's part of our job, is to figure out how that works. The questions about the loan funds and what kind of tools we have, the one tool we have is the Minnesota Investment Fund. That's statewide. That's basically it. And as Senator Tomasini knows, we're strapped there, and we're trying to hold on to our funds to use those around the state for projects that we can assist with. And we have tried over the years to use that, and as limited as our funds are and sparing as they are, to use it for projects that would be probably. Well, our range over the years has been somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 a job. So, and I appreciate hearing from you, Mr. Ward, because I think we did talk somewhere along the process. So, and I know you talked to Kevin McKinnon, our business development director, and I think Mr. Ward knows that we respect the work that they're trying to accomplish. If we just, several five jobs is no, I will never say five jobs is not a good number. Five jobs is a very good number. terms of the metrics of our programs where we can provide assistance. We just don't have the tools to provide substantial loan amounts for five jobs. Or, we have to focus our resources where we have larger. So I would love to be able to say that we have tools to help good companies like RGA Dispersions is and continues to be in Wisconsin. And I also have to say, given the moment at the table here, that we have had our share of wins with Wisconsin, too. Chandler Exhibits is a company on I-94. You had in eastern Wisconsin. They're on the right side of the highway. If you know where to look, I think across from that golf course on the other side of the highway is Chandler Exhibits, a company that was in the industrial park in Hudson about 5 years ago. They were moving 45 jobs, or to Minnesota it would have been 45 jobs, and we were able to give them a loan of, I think, about $250,000. They helped with their furnishing of a building they were going into in in Afton, actually, not Woodbury, but in Afton. You may be familiar with that. So
explain that $5,000 a job thing you hit on a minute.
Mr. Chairman, given the money we have, we try to get the maximum impact of our funds out of the dollars per job. So if a company says, and this is a very crude estimate, but if a company says we're going to be adding 20 jobs at our site, we're bringing 20 new jobs in, we try to, kind of our ballpark is between $5,000 and $10,000 a job. Based on the resources we have, and kind of overall try to spread the money out.
How is that handled, $100,000 for that?
That'd be a loan. That would be a loan.
It's a low interest loan.
Low interest loan, probably.
Has to be paid back? Yeah.
Yep. Sometimes we do forgivability if the local government says they'll forgive their portion, because under current law, the local government gets to keep 20% of that total loan as it's repaid. They keep 20% of that loan amount for a local revolving loan fund, as you said, which is Wisconsin does the same thing we do, which is we make a Minnesota Investment Fund loan to the city, or through the city to the company. The company repays it. Local government keeps 20% for a pot of money to use in other projects. So that's how
that's that like
works.
An local EDA or
yep,
something?
Exactly, yep. So I do appreciate Senator Saltzman's work on this, and we will work diligently to reply to it. But I got to tell you, this is the heart and soul of our department. And people talk about what DEED does. We have a lot of money in capital or community expenditures and brownfield and so on. But the lifeblood is really business development, because it is about jobs. And I've been in the shoes of business development director, and now I'm the director of that division. But this is on the front of all of our minds. So I thank you for your time, Senator, Mr. Chairman.
If there's anything we could add on, I don't know what they are, but that other states, Iowa, or maybe we can't, like South Dakota with no corporate taxes or income tax, we're not going to match that. We know that. But there might be some other so-called tools. I'm sure you guys have looked at it, but keep digging and look around. We need all the hammers and chisels. What else in the toolbox? Lots of things in the toolbox. So.
Arrows in the quiver, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, no, we don't do that. Do we use arrows?
Yeah, don't we use arrows?
I don't know.
Can't hear them coming, though, those arrows.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to, I guess, reinforce that again, I know Dee does an excellent job, and I think there's a role for other people that in these times where we really want to, maintain every job in Minnesota and look for opportunities, it's what can everyone do in a community? The local elected officials. And again, we look at when, companies have come to town. Let's make sure that we all know that when you pull together a team, it needs to be not just our economic development professionals, but are there other ways that we can enhance those efforts? So.
Okay. Well, this is a good little step or big step or
medium step.
Concept. What did you say? Oh, yeah. So we should, any further discussion? Okay, we need a motion.
So I'd like to move Senate File 2751 as amended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Did you get money in there? No, there's no money in there. On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you. The meeting.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. When do we meet again? Monday.
It's a good world.
Meeting Monday. How many bills? Oh, we haven't decided. Meeting's adjourned.